Well, 6 months on, the physical scars of the Adelaide Hills bushfire are healing. As I drove through the hills to Lobethal last week, it was hard to believe that there was a fire in some spots with green paddocks and lots of weeds. It's the trees that express the damage and the charred sides of roads which show just how intense and close the fire was. And just like the environmental recovery, the mental and emotional one has its ups and downs. For winemaker James Tilbrook from Tilbrook Estate, the fire didn't just damage his vineyard and winery. It also destroyed all his wine. He lost his income overnight. Like many I've spoken to after a bushfire, he has good days and bad. But amidst all the devastation, hope remains.
Well, part of me is positive, and in the sense that some parts of the business is moving forward. You know, we made a decision after the fire that we were going to put any insurance money we had into making sure that the cellar door was really set up properly, it was landscaped and everything, it would be good to go, because we really felt that that would be the best chance for us to be able to resurrect our income as soon as possible. And of course we were helped by the fact that we managed to get hold of some wine, and that liquor licensing gave us permission to sell somebody else's wine basically under our label. But on the other hand, you know, the vineyard, although we had a lot of volunteers who came through and helped cut back and pull out the sort of bits that had been cut back, and then pull out the old irrigation and put in new irrigation, there was a lot of time spent on all that. The vineyard still looks pretty sad. We have got 15% that has completely perished and is going to have to be all pulled out. The winery is, half of it's been demolished and the other half is just full of burnt out equipment that is all stainless steel, and we're hoping one day we might get a reasonable price for it, the scrap. So there's quite a lot of positive, but on the other hand, there's quite a lot of negative as well. Mentally, I do now seem to suffer from anxiety quite a bit, and I've been on this medication for a few months, and that has really helped. Not nearly as tense as I used to be, and also it helps with depression, but nonetheless it is still pretty sad, the whole thing. It's hard to stay positive really, but you just have to, because terrible things happen to a lot of people and you just have to stay positive and try and work your way out of it.
Because it's not just, you know, the physical recovery and the changing landscape. There is also that emotional and mental process that you go through. What has that process been like for you?
Well, to start with, when the fire first happened, I suppose it was probably shock. I mean, nobody has really gone through it all with us. We have had a bit of help. I did get to see somebody from Summit Health once, and they have made contact with me again, but really a bit disappointed really that they didn't sort of follow up earlier in the piece. To start with, as I say, there was that sense of I'll look at it, but I don't want to go into it. You know, I don't want to go into the vineyard. I didn't want to walk over and see the burnt out winery or the burnt out hay shed. The hay shed was something funny in many respects, because it was kind of always there. It was built in the 60s. We bought the property in the late 90s, but it was just kind of there on the horizon. And it was strange that it was that more than anything else that kind of seemed to be something that was gone, if you like. Even now, I don't really like going into the vineyard. It's 6 months on and I still don't really like going into the vineyard, but around the winery, yeah, I'm happy to go in there and potter about. And yeah, so some things have improved. I seem to be getting closer to getting into the vineyard, because I've been, you know, picking up piles of wire and burnt irrigation hose, and that's at the ends of the vineyard, you know, beside it. So I feel like I'm getting closer and closer to being able to get in there and do stuff.
What is it in particular about the vineyard? Is it an emotion that it brings back, or just the memory of that day? Or,
well, somebody's put it to me. We have had some sort of family counselling, rural family counselling sort of thing, And they said that, you know, it was a place that brought you joy and now it brings you sadness. And so the juxtaposition of that means that you sort of don't really want to engage. I'm hoping that, you know, by next spring when it's all tidied up and we've got all new posts and strainers and wires and irrigation in there, it's all pruned, all the vines that are dead have been cut back, that then it will start to look more normal. And I think that was the biggest shock, really, was that it was sort of the time of year when the vines are sort of vibrant and full of leaf and should be sort of canopies of a metre high, and they were all just brown or black, you know. It was just sort of very hard to bear.
The other thing that everyone's grappling with, and this is not as common, is after this bushfire, a few months later, COVID-19 happens, and not only does that sort of slow down, you know, the physical recovery process, but also those outlets to go and have a chat with people are removed.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, during COVID, we couldn't go and see anybody. It was kind of bad news. And when COVID hit, you know, our sales basically dropped through the floor, and we went from actually doing quite well because of the bushfire and people's generosity wanting to come up and help to nothing. And fortunately, website sales, online sales have been reasonable. And also, I mean, our situation is different to a lot of the other wine producers who had wine, their own wine and so on, that they could keep selling. We were having to buy in wine. So, you know, our profit margins aren't nearly as good as theirs would have been.
James, you mentioned before how you were in a different situation to other wineries in the sense that not only did you have damage to your vineyard, but you lost all your wine. Can you tell us the story about the Bottles of Hope and how you've been able to get to the point where you've been able to sell some wine? Because I know that's been through, the generosity of others in the region as well.
Yeah, so the original plan which we came up with was to buy, and it's something that we have done in the past, is to buy wine in bulk from other wineries. And under our license, which is a producer's license, we have to produce the wine. So we have to make the wine. So that could be making it from grapes, or it could be from buying in wine, but then changing it somehow or other. And so that was what our plan was to get some, you know, sake of argument, some Chardonnay, some Piccadilly Valley Chardonnay or whatever, and some from somewhere else, and get some Pinot Noir, and, you know, same thing, two or three different suppliers, and blend it all together in to make a Pinot Noir that's our wine. And a friend of mine who owns a winery suggested, you know, instead of going through all that palaver, bearing in mind mental state and all the other things I had to think about as well, why don't you just buy a whole load of wine from me? It's already all in bottle, and all you need to do is to buy it off me, and then it's ready to go. And at the same time, somebody else who was selling up, I think their vineyard, small quality producer, offered me 600 bottles of their reserved Shiraz, which is incredibly generous because it's about $25,000 worth of wine. That was Rod Short from Romney Park, and I'm really forever grateful for him, because he and Terre à Terre, which is in Piccadilly Valley, offered me a couple of tons of Chardonnay for free. That's where the word really hope kind of came into us. It gave us hope that we weren't in it on our own. So those sort of acts of generosity, in part giving me wine, in part giving me wine at a good price that I could draw down on, and then also giving me fruit. You know, and then also the Wake campus agreed to make the wine for us for free, this vintage. So we didn't have much fruit. We didn't have any fruit from our vineyard, but we bought a bit in, all that sort of stuff. It's kind of the wine industry pulling together, I feel. But there are some people like that, and there are other people who just go, yeah, you just got to pay full price. So you kind of have to hope for the best, I suppose.
What have you sort of learnt along the way? And what do you think it's important that, you know, people outside of bushfire-affected areas understand? Because obviously this is going to take years. It's not just done in months.
Yeah, I do feel that there's people do, of course, move on to the next disaster. And for a couple of months, it was a bushfire. You know, COVID, they're all very important things, but people's attention does move from one thing to another. And one of the things I said right early on, that we just don't want to get forgotten about.
That was James Tilbrook from Tilbrook Estate in Lobethal. James also went on to say that he's just been struck by how generous people have been to them, from those they know to complete strangers, people who donated money, and about 250 volunteers who gave up their time to help him clean up and rebuild. James also told me that when he replants part of his vineyard, there's going to be some Tempranillo and Shiraz going in, and he's hoping to open his zero net carbon cellar door later this year.